question that was drawn out last week takes us to Christmas. Didn't know it was coming that quickly, did you? Let's see. 25 and 30 is 55, and 31 is 86, and 30 more is 116. You know where I'm counting, right? You don't want to know how many days until Christmas? The question really goes back to trying to understand something of what the Gospels are, how they were put together, and what not only we find in the text, but what the church has put forth over the years. The question that was written, why is the account of Jesus' birth written in more detail in the Gospel of Luke rather than in the Gospel of Matthew? After all, Matthew was a disciple of Jesus, whereas Luke was a companion of Paul. And as an aside, I imagine that the writer was also indicating, as a companion of Paul, Luke never met the earthly Jesus. Very good question. When we come and start looking at the documents in the New Testament, of course, first of all, we've talked in the past about how that actually the letters of Paul were all written before the first gospel was written, and the first gospel was the Gospel of Mark. Matthew was placed first because it was something of the manual used the most by the church, because Matthew is the only one of the four gospel writers in the canonical gospels to call the church, to use the word ecclesia, to refer to this gathering that Jesus began with those disciples. And so the Gospel of Matthew then was placed first and foremost. We do know that there was a disciple who was named Matthew, sometimes called Levi. There is still debate as to whether his name was actually Levi, or it's Matthew from the tribe of Levi. Although I find that a little bit difficult to hang on to, because Matthew's profession was what? What was Matthew? Okay, thank you. A tax collector. And I kind of doubt that the priests from the tribe of Levi would be involved in collecting the taxes for the Romans. Now, they would be involved in collecting the temple tax for the Jews, but not collecting the tax for the Romans. So we do know that there was one disciple whose name was Matthew, who probably was also known as Levi. Matthew was a follower of Jesus. And actually, there are folks who wonder how much of the gospel Matthew may have written, because his name is actually not listed at the beginning. When we look in our Bibles and it says the gospel according to Matthew, the gospel according to Mark, the gospel according to Luke, the gospel according to John, actually, when they were first written, there were no names placed on the front of them. And what name we have in Greek simply says according to Matthion, according to Markon, according to Lucan, according to Ioanne, which is John. We do know that in some of the gospel writings there was definitely collaboration. Mark was used by Matthew and by Luke, as well as using other sources. In fact, somewhere around 77% or so of those gospels are found, of Matthew and Luke, are contained Mark. In fact, about 50% of what Matthew and Mark have in common is almost verbatim. Mark was a source in this particular writing. It was a new kind of writing, this gospel. And our question asks, why, if Matthew was a disciple and an eyewitness, did he not have a more lengthy birth story than Luke? Well, if we look at the birth stories, we find that they both have a fair amount of material, and they both agree on a number of things. They both agree that Joseph has been chosen to be the earthly father and raise Jesus. That Mary, who is a virgin, has conceived by a miracle of the Holy Spirit called the virginal conception. We call it virgin birth, but actually it's a mode of conception that is important here, not the process of birth. We talked before about how some even took that to the point of where when Jesus was born, none of the membranes were broken in the birth process. We know that they both agree that Mary and Joseph are engaged and have not come to live together as husband and wife, which is very, very important. They both agree that the birth is in Bethlehem, though they differ as to how they got there. If all we have was Matthew, then they were already living there in a house, because when the wise men show up, they don't go in the stable, they go in the house and find the mother and the child. Luke tells us they made a trip for a census. But they both agree the birth took place in Bethlehem. They both agree that the birth took place in the late reign of Herod the Great. Herod dies in 4 B.C. So somewhere in 5 or 4 B.C. most likely is when Jesus was born. They both agree that an angel made an announcement about the impending birth. In Matthew, the angel makes the announcement to Joseph, the father whose right it is to have Mary either stoned to death because he's not the father and he doesn't know how this has happened, or put away, or marry her, and he decides to marry her. In Luke, the angel appears to Mary to tell her what is taking place. They both agree that the child is to be named Jesus. In fact, in both accounts, it's not an option. The angel says, you will call him Jesus. They both agree that Jesus was raised as a boy in Nazareth, in the province of Galilee. Now that's a lot of agreement. But as we've also mentioned before, there's a whole lot of stuff that one has that the other doesn't to complete the story, to complete our understanding. Matthew is responsible, most likely, for the majority of the material outside of Mark. The stories, the understandings. And Mark, of course, was the scribe of Simon Peter, who was the chief of the apostles. Yet Matthew, as an ancient biographer, whether he is writing this down or perhaps even dictating it to someone, because we do know that they had scribes who would copy things down. Paul had different scribes that would copy down his letters to different places. Ancient biographers are a little bit different from modern biographers. Ancient biographers did not usually spend very much time on the childhood or early youth of persons about whom they wrote. They were more interested in trying to capture the character of the person as they lived their lives. In much of the ancient world, and especially within the ancient Greco-Roman world, people generally believed that a person was born with their personality. It was not something that was developed. They were born with whatever personality they might have. So if you were type A plus, as some people are, and your personality reflects that, you were born that way. You weren't made that way by an overbearing parent that said you got to make straight A's. Whatever characteristics there were in your personality, they were born into you. And so they didn't worry so much about the early childhood or early youth of persons about whom they wrote. And it's not just with the gospel writers, in particular with Matthew. Mark doesn't even include a birth story, nor does John. But they were more interested in how and when that personality was revealed over time. So you were born with that personality, but it doesn't really show up until after your youth, when you actually start making a living, having a vocation, and that's when that would start showing up and be revealed over time. They were not writing for a technical audience for the most part. Rather, they were writing for a more general and popular audience. And so, with that in mind, it would seem that while Matthew does include something of the birth narratives of Jesus, he is not as interested in technical kinds of things and tracing down names and dates and all that kind of stuff as Luke, because he's more interested in the public ministry of Jesus and capturing Jesus' character and integrity and personality in that public ministry. So while the birth story is somewhat important for him to establish that Jesus is from the line of David, it's more important for him to write about the public ministry and what is revealed about Jesus in that public ministry. So while Matthew is concerned with that birth, he is more concerned with the birth from the standpoint of linking Jesus to the line of David from which Messiah was to come. And therefore, in Matthew's account, we have he betrays something of his Jewishness, actually, as well as the audience to which he is writing, a Jewish and Jewish Christian audience, by those parts of the birth narrative that he does include. The genealogy of Jesus goes back to whom in the Gospel of Matthew? The great patriarch goes through David to and Abraham. And guess what? It's divided. The genealogy is actually divided into three divisions. And we've mentioned before that within Hebrew numerology, three is a highly significant number indicating the presence and the action of God. And so there are three distinct divisions in that genealogy to show once again that this is God at work in Jesus. Matthew includes that story of the angel coming to Joseph, who is to be the father and who is the one who has the right officially to name the child and who is the one that decides what happens to the mother and the child in Jewish society. To have the angel come and speak to Mary for his Jewish audience would be highly extraordinary and would turn some folks off, actually, because that was not fitting or proper for a woman to get that kind of information. You remember, women were not even to be spoken to or to speak to a man in public, not even their own husbands in that period in time. Matthew includes things in there that would be impressive, once again, to tie Jesus to that heritage, but also to impress his Jewish and Jewish Christian readers as to the fact that Jesus was indeed this important messianic figure, because you've got King Herod who is scared to death because another king has been born. You've got allusions to Old Testament prophecy throughout. You have magi, we call them wise men, but they were very wealthy, almost kingly figures themselves in ancient Babylonia and surrounding regions, who come in search of this child as Messiah, and that would be very impressive to his Jewish audience and hooks them right at the beginning to show this is indeed the Son of David, the Messiah who has come. And then he jumps very quickly from they go back after going to Egypt, they go back to Nazareth, and Jesus is still a young child, to Jesus at age 30. Why? Once again, he's done what he needs to do to let folks know that this story, that the personality that develops and the character that develops in the ministry of Jesus has divine origin. But he's not interested in what Jesus does in that in-between period, because that's not important. That's not the vocation which Jesus has come to fulfill. Luke, on the other hand, if indeed he is the person that we think he is, a companion of Paul, and by trade a physician, Luke is very much into asking questions, doing research, trying to give as a physician and as a Gentile. He is very much into trying to give orderly accounts, look for detail, try to tie all the loose ends together. That's what folks like that do. Actually, his name's only mentioned three times in the New Testament. In 2 Timothy 4:11, in Philemon 24. But the most significant mention is in Colossians 4, verse 14, where we find out from Paul what his companion's occupation was. Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas greet you. A physician, a man of science, a man of research, and a man who tells us up front that he has done a great deal of research. Luke chapter 1. And as we've talked about and most know, Luke actually penned, we think, a two-volume work, the Gospel according to Luke, which deals with the life of Jesus, and the book of Acts, which follows immediately upon that and deals with the early development of the church. And both of them are written to a fellow by the name of Theophilus, which means friend of God. And in Luke chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, so I was talking with David the other day. He said, "What's the question, my son David?" And I told him, he said, "Well, you know, the short answer, all you got to do, Dad, is go read from Luke chapter 1. I said, "Yeah, but that's too short." But Luke chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. "Since many have undertaken to set down an orderly account of the events that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed on to us by those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and servants of the word, I too decided, after investigating everything carefully from the very first, to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the truth concerning the things about which you have been instructed." Luke says right at the beginning, "I know other people have written stuff. I know other people have told stories. I'm well aware of that. Some of them were eyewitnesses," he says in verse 2, "who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and servants of the word." He said, so I know these things have been going on. People have written stuff, people have been talking, and I've been really curious about this, and I have investigated. This isn't some haphazard thing. Luke says, I've gotten out there, and I've done the research, and I've investigated, and I've checked out a lot of these sources. I've even interviewed some of these folks. And so now, I'm ready to put my research together and write out for you what I've discovered to be true in an orderly fashion. Sounds like a doctorate set. Nobody would be able to read his handwriting, so he had to have a scribe, right? In fact, Luke has been called the first historian of Christianity because of his research and the meticulous way that he goes about it. He's also been called one of the first true theologians, he along with Paul, of the Christian church, because he is very interested in how not only the history plays out, but how the theology is seen, the presence of God. And so he tells us right up front, "I did research." And when we talked last week about Adam and where those people come from, if there were only two, I told you right up front, a lot of what I'm going to say, this was last time, a lot of what I'm going to say tonight comes from an article that I wrote for the Mercer Dictionary of the Bible some years ago on Adam, and I figured no need to waste all that research. Right? Well, that's what Luke figures too. I've done all this research, I've done all this interviewing, I've done all this reading. There's no need to waste that research. I'm going to write all this stuff down in an orderly way so that you can know what I've discovered and what I've concluded from that meticulous study. And so while many early ancient biographers are not interested in the detail, every now and then there comes that aberration, like Luke, who's very much interested in the detail and the research. By the way, Luke's the only one in the Garden of Gethsemane. When one of the disciples gets mad, and we just presume it was Peter because he was a hothead, but it never says. When one of them cuts the ear off the servant of the high priest, Luke is the only one that doesn't leave the ear laying on the ground. Seriously, you go look at that. In the Gospels that record that incident, Luke is the only one that says, and Jesus reached up and touched and healed the ear. Everybody else just leaves the guy screaming and the ear laying on the ground. Physician. Detail. Detail. And so Luke doesn't just go back to Abraham. Luke doesn't just go back to Joseph and Mary. Luke's genealogy of Jesus, over around chapter 3, goes all the way back to the common ancestor, Adam. Oh, it doesn't include every generation, just like Matthew's didn't. It includes important generations all the way back to Adam. It's not just a Jewish lineage, it's a lineage of humanity. For you see, in Luke, Jesus comes to be Savior of the whole world. That's what the angels say. And Luke himself, as a Gentile convert to Christianity, is very aware of that. It's not just for the Jews. It's for anyone who will come. With that in mind, he goes back even further than Jesus and Mary and Joseph. He does more interviews and more research, and he's interested even in the person who is the forerunner to Jesus and who baptizes Jesus and announces who Jesus is, John, Jesus' cousin. And once again, if he's going to do all these interviews, he's not going to waste it. He wants us to know. And so Luke does have a longer, he really does have a longer birth narrative than Matthew. But it's in large part due to his interest in wanting to not leave out any detail, any stone unturned, or any detail that can possibly shed light for his Gentile readers in particular, who are used to people talking about gods and goddesses all over the place out here. He wants them to understand who Jesus is as Son of God, as Messiah, not just for the Jews, but Messiah for the Gentiles as well. And so we have a story of Zechariah, the father of John the Baptizer, who is a priest, and a vision that he has that his wife, who is barren and who is beyond childbearing years, that she's going to become pregnant and have a son. And he's going to name him John. And that son's going to be great. And Zechariah's laughter and disbelief, which results in, as I've said before, results in a fate almost worse than death for the whole 9 months this woman's pregnant. He can't say a word back to her, no matter what she says. The birth of John the Baptizer, at which he is named John, and he is that forerunner. In between the angel's visit to Mary and what the angel told Mary and what Mary's response was, which we call the Magnificat. My soul does magnify the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, etc. And then he talks about the common folks, the shepherds and angels. And it's interesting that there is, I think, a very interesting statement in Luke chapter 2. After the shepherds come. But Mary, verse 19, but Mary treasured all these words and kept them in her heart. Some of this detail could only come from a connection, an interview or a statement from Mary. As a physician, as a researcher, you would expect him to do that kind of thing. Why does Luke have more detail? Even a story of Jesus' circumcision, to show that this was not some haphazard couple, but that they were very careful to do the things according to the law. The sacrifices for Mary's purification. Even though Luke's a Gentile, he includes that from the law for Judaism. Once again, to show the kinds of parents these are. Simeon's prophecy about this child, who is a light for revelation to the Gentiles and glory for your people Israel. Anna's preaching that she's found the consolation of Israel, or Jerusalem, that is, the Messiah. Jesus in the temple at age 12, showing his extraordinary intelligence and interest in religion, and giving very deep answers and asking very piercing questions. All of this is to show that it's not some quirk of fate that, like the shepherd Zarathustra, also known as Zoroaster, when he's about 30 years old, suddenly gets religion and starts a new religion. But rather, in his research, he has come to the conclusion that right from the very beginning, Jesus was on a path leading to that vocation, that purpose for which he was born and had come. And so Luke is very much involved in giving that kind of detail, why he says to Theophilus, so that you may know the truth concerning the things about which you have been instructed. Luke is one of those who wants to give all the possible evidence and look at everything from every possible angle before drawing his conclusions and saying to someone, here it is. That, I think, is why Luke contains so much more material than Matthew, because Matthew is more interested in the earthly ministry. Luke is trying to tie the whole life together. For those who have no real concept of Messiah, see, with Matthew coming out of Judaism, they've been looking for a Messiah for ages, even though they kind of missed what Messiah truly was. For Luke, he is writing predominantly to Gentiles, to outcasts, to marginalized people, to show who have very little connection or knowledge of what Messiah is, in order to give them as much evidence to make that decision for Messiah as he possibly can. Like I said, it is Luke who also has Jesus healing the ear, or records that Jesus healed the ear. It is Luke that has some of the more familiar parables. Luke's the only place you find the Good Samaritan. Once again, an outcast, but one for whom Jesus came. A light for revelation to the Gentiles and glory to your people Israel. The prodigal son, his father, and his older brother, that parable is only found in Luke. Rich man and Lazarus, Luke. The Pharisee and the tax collector, Luke. And so many other things that Luke contains. Why? Because he has really gone to great lengths to show the truth of the things about which Theophilus, and actually the things about which you and I have been told, that have been shared with us. So I could have made that a whole lot shorter simply by reading from Luke chapter 1 and saying, as my son David said, Luke says right up front, I did the research. Part of the reason, too, I think, is that Matthew was steeped in the traditions as a Jew, and he didn't have to do so much research. And that wasn't what was important to him. But sharing the personality and the integrity and the development of Jesus' character in his earthly ministry was. Questions, comments? Ariel, I haven't forgotten your Rechabites. I'm still doing some reading on the Rechabites. You asked that question last week. On my desk. So. Okay. I hope this has been at least a little bit helpful.